And mic check 1 2, mic check 1 2. Peace to the planet, peace to the planet. We back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. I know it's been a long, long hiatus. If it was long for you, it was even longer for me. But I'm back. So much has transpired in the last time I was able to get here and record a podcast. The biggest thing is I bought a house. That is what almost all of my energy got put into for the last couple of months is looking for a house, finding a house, going through the entire loan process, getting a mortgage, moving in, settling in, getting into a schedule and a routine. It's been a long, long, tough ride, but we're here, So that's actually the first thing that I want to talk about is the value of home ownership and how for millennials like myself, or since I'm now 36, they call it geriatric millennial. I guess that means older millennial. I don't know. They come up with all kind of stuff these days. But the window does appear to be shrinking for us to be homeowners. And that is probably the fastest and most safe way to start generational wealth, that's how it was taught to me. So just to give you guys a little bit of my experience, and if you're around my age, whether you're a little bit younger or a little bit older, and you still haven't been able to buy a house yet, the key word there is yet, don't feel bad. I made a social media post about this, as a matter of fact, where I said, I was at the ripe old age of 36, I became a first-time homeowner. And what I wanted to do is kind of dispel certain, I don't want to call it a stereotype, but maybe it's best to call it a narrative I see on social media. When people are buying their houses, they're putting an age with, like, the age matters. Hey, I'm a first-time homeowner at 21, at 22, at 19. And that's an accomplishment, no doubt. But what I need to make clear is that it's definitely a race that you run on your own. That's what life is. It's running your own race at your own pace to get where you want to be. You know what I mean? When I was younger, as a younger parent especially, I didn't necessarily see the true value of home ownership because I had such a good support system around me that I never felt like I was gonna hit bottom to the point where my family would never have somewhere to live. You know what I mean? But at the same time, I sank so much money into renting. All of that could have been equity by now. I've been on my job for almost 15 years, and it's a career that normally you're able to have a stable income in. I should have bought a house on, but you live and you learn. You make mistakes, you make bad decisions, and the best thing you can do is learn from them. And I finally learned enough of the lessons to get me in the position that I was in. So if you're like me and you, for whatever reason, you just didn't know where to get started, the people who you know already own homes, whether it be your parents, close family members, close friends, ask them. My dad, of course, my main hero, the guy I look up to the most, and I try to follow in his footsteps the most. He finally sat me down and he said, "Look, check this out. This is what you have to do. You have to do A, B, and C. First thing he told me to do, talk to a lender." I already knew I had to work on my credit, but I was working on it blind. And instead of me working on it blind for 2 or 3 years like I was, if I had talked to a lender in the beginning and had them do a soft pull or a hard pull, whatever they had to do, and say, "Okay, here's where you are. Here's your score. Here's what you want to get. So since you want to buy this type of home, here's where you need to be. And to get where you need to be, here's what you can do. You can pay this off. You can pay this down. You can, submit that you already have taken care of this debt, or have them report that you've been a good creditor and you've been paying on time, like all this stuff I could have done. And it went from me trying to do it on my own for 2 or 3 years, paying off debt, reacquiring debt, paying off debt, reacquiring debt, to I got in January of 2020, spoke to a lender. Lender said, okay, here's where you are. Here's what you want to do. Here's what you need to do. Get it done. Next thing you know, fast forward, and a year later, when I've done all that, lender pulled my score again. Oh, guess what? You did all that and you're pre-approved. And I went from pre-approved to moving into my house in less than 6 months. I wasted so much time trying to do it by myself and trying to do it on my own instead of just asking. I don't know why sometimes we as human beings, and especially as men, young men, we have a hard time just asking for help. If I'd asked for this kind of help a long time ago and listened, I probably would have been able to buy a house a long time ago. But, you know, like I said, you live and you learn, and you make those mistakes, you gotta learn from them. So I finally did learn from mine. So once I got the lender to pre-approve me, you know, they gave me the budget. I live in Southern California. So while this may sound like a lot, for the market that's right now, it was still almost, you know, not enough for me to stay in the area I wanted to stay in. So I got pre-approved on my own for $610,000, which in most places would get me a mini mansion or, you know, a house with a couple of acres and some land and stuff. But here in Southern California, that was barely enough to keep me in a middle class neighborhood. And, you know, had I had not waited so long to buy, I wouldn't have had to be, you know, getting a loan for so much money just to live in a place that is nice, but there's no way that some of the houses that I see on the market in my neighborhood are going for $1 million. And you're like, dude, that's not a $1 million house. But that's the way the market goes. You know what I mean? Another thing I was doing that I'm learning from talking to not only just my realtor, but other realtors and other people who have been in real estate for a while. They don't believe it's going to be a bubble that bursts. 2008, when the market crashed, a lot of people who were not homeowners were able to become homeowners because of the fallout from the market. And so people thought with the way the economy was going in the pandemic that they would be able to do the same kind of thing where the bubble would burst and things would just work out for them. There's a growing sentiment that that is not going to happen. If anything, it may level off, but for the time being, because inflation and the cost of housing is cost of building a house costs so much, and there is more people looking for houses than there are houses available, it's going to be like this for a while. I know that during the pandemic, there was a lot of policies put in place that prevented people from being evicted for not paying rent and not paying mortgages. As we move further away from the pandemic, those are going to have to start coming home to roost too. So that may help things level out, but they don't think it's going to be another bubble that bursts. So essentially, I was going to wait for that to happen. And if I did that, I would have probably been priced out of my neighborhood right now. I probably would not be able to afford where I live. Hell, I was able to buy my house in May. In August, I'm already seeing the prices even higher than when I was looking. And it's just the neighborhood hasn't changed that much. It's just that's how the supply and demand is working. So if you are like me and you have a stable income, if you have a significant other and you guys both have stable incomes, and you're like, I'm gonna wait until the market bursts and wait, don't wait. I'm telling you now, don't wait. There's some crazy stuff that's going on that it just won't allow you to. There's a corporation right now. I put this on my Instagram a while ago, but I think it feels good. Well, it sounds right to bring it up again. There's a corporation called BlackRock. BlackRock has been buying up entire neighborhoods. This is a corporation. They're buying entire neighborhoods and renting those homes out. That's how you create permanent renters. It's not fair. I don't know if there's a way to even stop that kind of thing from happening, but at the moment, that's what's happening. So you'll go into a house and you'll see, you know, not only are you there to try to bid on it, but normally, especially if you're in a decent neighborhood with a decent school district, there's going to be 40 or 50 other people bidding on that house with you. There are people putting out cash offers for homes who will never step foot in that house because they either want to rent it out or they have enough money where they're going to just, you know, tear it down, build their own thing. Whatever they're doing, they're putting down cash offers. And people like you and I who, you know, have to get a loan and mortgage and all that, we're really getting priced out of this thing. And this company called BlackRock, let's see, I'm reading from this website because I Googled it real quick to make sure I got the right information. The website is called strangesounds.org. It doesn't sound like it's something that is mainstream, but a lot of times to get some of the more pertinent information, you can't stick with mainstream type news. So it says here in the first quarter of 2021, 15% of U.S. homes were purchased by corporate investors, not families looking to achieve their dream. It's in the first quarter of this year, 15% of the houses that were sold were purchased by corporate investors, which means those are the people who will never sell those houses back. They're going to make that a permanent investment property. And it's one thing if you know I used to rent a house before I moved into this one. So I'm not looking down on renters at all. I'm just trying to tell you how things are going. So for instance, with the house I was renting before this one, I knew that my landlord was an actual human being. And that even though I might have been, he was making money off of me at the time he allowed me to rent his house, it was the best thing for me and my family and the best place for us to live. I'm not paying a corporation. I was paying a man. And that came with some good karma because I stayed there for so long and I was such a good tenant that by the time I moved out, my rent was so below market rate. He was like, I hate to see you go because you are such a good tenant. But now that you are leaving, I can take the price from the $2,500 you were paying. Somebody's going to pay him, you know, $3,500 a month for that house. So I felt better paying a human being to work with something like that other than paying some kind of corporation. And I'm telling you, they're competing with us. Middle-class Americans, we're competing with corporate investors to buy our houses. The one I got, I'm so blessed that we got it. You know what I mean? Because it really, everything worked out. It was some ups and downs and some bumps in the road, but everything ended up working out. But that's not always the case. You have to bid on home after home after home after home. And sometimes people end up settling. Sometimes people get so frustrated with the process, they just say, forget about it. Stay where they are and spend the money they saved up on a vacation or on a new car or something. You know what I mean? But at the end of the day, I know I want it for myself. I wanted somewhere that my kids could always come home to. I didn't have that. I didn't have a place that no matter how bad it got, my kids could come and live there. Now I do. You know what I mean? So if something does happen to me, I'm at least leaving them something that is more of a jumping off point. I don't whether they stay here or they sell it at a profit or they use it as an investment property, whatever it is, I now have the ability to give my kids something. You know what I mean? And that's really what it's about. So if you're like me, you know, a geriatric millennial, it's not too late, but the window is closing. I don't like to sound like an alarmist, but there are some things where I feel like I gotta, you know, keep it all the way 100 with you guys and just tell you exactly what it is. You know what I mean? You're competing with an investment corporations who are buying up entire neighborhoods. We just have to, you know, find a way to make it happen, man. Another thing that is a good reason why, even though the rates are starting to creep back up, the interest rates are still extremely low. And people are refinancing and getting, you know, lower mortgages. Someone like me is coming in where, if, you know, don't tell them how high my interest rate would have been a couple of years ago. But here, you know, now I'm only paying 3%. If I can play my cards right, hopefully I'll refinance in another 6 months and it'll drop down to maybe, you know, 2.8, 2.7, something like that. But you get wiggle room, you know, and now I'm building equity. And it's something that I can use to do almost whatever I want. You know what I mean? So that's been the biggest transition that we had, is that move and buying the house. And it's been a blessing. It's been stressful, but that's what kept me away for so long, because I wanted to make sure that I did everything right. And so at the same time, moving in here, that wasn't, it's a different setup. So there isn't very many places for me to record, because it's a, you know, we didn't buy a bigger house. We downsized a little bit. So there's always somebody in the room somewhere, but you know, making the best of it. Thank you all for sticking with me for this long. You know what I mean? And I'm glad that we've been able to keep rocking with each other. I'm back. Hopefully now that I'm settled and I'm feeling a little bit rejuvenated, I can get back on this thing and start catching up, because I owe so many episodes. I know I was gone for like 3 months, so I owe a lot of episodes and I owe a lot of content. So be prepared. You know, this is only the first segment of the new episode. I got one more that I'm going to talk about involving social media censorship and the White House, which I think is something very alarming, something I think needs to be talked about more and more. People need to pay more attention to it. So thank you all for sticking with me, and I'll be back in the next segment. Welcome back. Here I am, obviously trying to get what's called a new visual element to the platform. So bear with me. As I talked about in the previous segment, what I really want to talk about is something that I think is becoming much more of an issue. It's becoming much more prevalent, and the conversation is continuing to spread. And that's censorship by the U.S. government. And in particular, that censorship happening on social media. So like I said, it's been something that's been coming up for a while now. The conversation really started to take off a couple years ago during the 2016 election. But even before that, people were a bit concerned because personality Alex Jones, who many consider to be a very, very deep conspiracy theorist, he was banned from YouTube and basically hasn't been able to make anything widely accessible on a platform like YouTube ever since. So what's coming up recently is some of the biggest examples, of course, former President Donald Trump being basically removed from Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram after the January 6th riots at the Capitol. Many people believe it was the right decision. I am not one of those people. I don't think you have to support former President Trump to understand that that was a slippery slope to begin with. And at the time, he was still the sitting president. So if the sitting president could be removed from social media, it should have been a pretty big wake-up call to people that pretty much you're next. If you're accused of wrong think, the thought police are going to get you and they're going to take you off of platforms. I don't have a big following yet, so I don't think it's something I have to necessarily worry about. Hell, I may never get a big following, but at the moment, me and my little podcast and YouTube channel, I don't think we have anything quite to worry about just yet. One of the things you can do to avoid, obviously, being banned is to use a lot of establishment type media sources. Unfortunately, those are not always the most reliable sources, but they are considered usually okay for social media standards and YouTube standards, unless it's an opinion piece that is saying something that people don't really like. You know what I mean? So unfortunately, that's the way that works out. I hate to see it happen that way, but it is what it is. So what I've tried to do is when I talk about something, I try to use what are considered NewsGuard certified sources. NewsGuard is what media sources have to run their stories through for them to be okay to be published or posted, you know, whatever you want to call it. So generally, I try to stick with those sources when I'm talking on the podcast and when I'm doing something for YouTube, because when it comes down to it, the information is out there and I try to at least spread it. I may sound a little bit more calm today than I did yesterday. I was very excited recording that first segment in a long time and talking about home ownership and how important that was and me buying my first home. But this topic is a little bit more serious and a little more concerning. So, you know, that's why my energy appears to have changed. So anyway, like I said, the former President Donald Trump was banned from social media after the events of January 6th. And on the surface, it was like, yeah, good. This person who may have caused the January 6th riots was banned from being on social media. The problem was, I think it's still pretty discernible whether or not he actually inspired people to go and do the horrific and stupid things that they did on January 6th. All the transcripts I've seen from his speeches don't indicate anything remotely violent. He's not telling people to go act a fool. He literally said, let's go cheer on some politicians to do their jobs. How that got turned into the unbelievable display that we saw on January 6th is beyond me. But just based on what I read from those transcripts, I mean, it's not a read between the lines type of deal. I don't think that's how we should be conducting ourselves when it comes to something like censorship. It needs to be either this person said this or they didn't. And from what I could see, that's not what what Trump said. So that was already concerning for me, you know. Now, just a couple of days ago, the White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki actually held a briefing. And during the briefing, as you can see here, I have it up on the screen. It says, this is from the Washington Times. White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki says the White House is actively searching out what it believes to be COVID-19 misinformation and flagging problematic posts for Facebook. The Democrat made the comment Thursday while talking to reporters about the contagion and Silicon Valley's role in controlling the information related to it. So we've increased disinformation research and tracking within the Surgeon General's office. Ms. Psaki said, we are flagging problematic posts for Facebook that spread disinformation. It also says we are in regular touch with social media platforms, and those engagements typically happen through members of our senior staff and also members of our COVID-19 team, given that Surgeon General Dr. Vivek Murthy conveyed that's a big issue of misinformation, specifically on the pandemic, is what she said. And of course, it goes into footage of Ms. Psaki's comments were picked up on the RNC Twitter, and you know, some supporters of the White House cheered it, and then others who are critical of the White House said it reminds them of something inspired by George Orwell's 1984, the novel. So you may be asking yourself, what is the big deal? Misinformation is bad. Disinformation is bad. It should be at least controlled. I don't disagree with that. I don't. I think the biggest issue is Jen Psaki speaking for President Biden and his administration when she says, we are flagging post for Facebook. And I got into a pretty good discussion about this with a friend of mine on social media. She's a very smart person, so I understood where she was coming from. And she's probably smarter than me, so, you know, my perspective may not be something that she can completely identify with, but I haven't really changed my mind on the subject. So, I watch the Jimmy Dore show. Jimmy Dore is a very progressive, left-leaning personality. He does his own YouTube show, and for all intents and purposes, he's pretty critical of the Biden White House. And I try to, you know, listen to him and see what he says about different things. Also listen to Tim Pool. Tim Pool is much more of a centrist, much more libertarian than he is actual right or left leaning. But he also talks about this type of censorship and why it's bad a lot. So in listening to them and just seeing what I've been seeing and reading what I've been reading, the reason why this becomes a big issue is, for the most part, even without it being made official, quote unquote, social media is now akin to public utilities. It's almost impossible to run a business these days without some sort of social media presence. In the same way, the printing press became and revolutionized the way we communicate and the way information is put out. In the same way, the telephone came and revolutionized and changed the way information can be put out and passed on. So now a lot of people have been looking at social media platforms as public utilities. And when they make that comparison, they say the same way AT&T or Verizon or T-Mobile, whoever it is that you have a contract with or who you use for their telephone services, in the same way they can't monitor your phone calls, monitor what you're saying, and then if they don't like what you're saying, pull the plug on your account, they're saying the same thing should be applied to social media, because it's such a part of our culture now. It's become part of our social infrastructure, so to speak. So the biggest issue, like I said, is that the White House is admitting that they themselves are flagging posts and giving those posts to Facebook, who then remove those posts. And in that same briefing, Jen Psaki said that she actually, that they take their own people and boost their own posts. Facebook will boost the posts of the people who the Biden administration approves of, okay? That's a backdoor way to say we're controlling social media. Facebook, one of the biggest platforms on the planet, the White House is now controlling that. And then the question will always be, how do we sift through what's considered disinformation or misinformation? Because, you know, who is the ultimate arbitrator of that? Because if it's just left up to the White House, at the risk of sounding something that may even get me banned or whatnot, the White House doesn't always give the best information either. And that can come straight from the mouth of our own president. President Biden recently held a town hall on CNN. And of course, one of the big topics was COVID-19. COVID-19 and the vaccines. What President Biden said was, if you get the vaccine, you won't get COVID. If you get the vaccine, you will not get sick and hospitalized. And if you get the vaccine, you won't die. Remember, this is the President of the United States. None of that is true about any of the vaccines. In fact, some of the biggest campaigns to get people to be vaccinated is to be transparent with them and tell them, this will not stop you from getting COVID. It's not a cure. You can still catch it, but if you catch it, the likelihood of you getting very sick is significantly reduced. That's what the vaccine is. But that's not what the president said. And he said this on live TV. So if the White House is acting as the arbitrator and gets to decide what is misinformation and what's disinformation, then the president, just to millions of people, gave out misinformation. He was wrong, very wrong, about a pretty touchy subject. There are already people who don't trust the vaccine and don't trust the government. So now you have the government saying we're kind of in charge of what's going on Facebook, and by that degree, Instagram, because Facebook owns Instagram. We're now deciding what you can and can't post. That's not the government's job. If Facebook was to hire either some people from within or some independent panel or workers or whatever it is that they need, and they go through and they decide, okay, this is a problematic post, whatever that could be, that makes sense. It is still considered a private company, and that's what they're supposed to do. So the fact that they're basically taking their marching orders from the White House, and they decide the end-all be-all in what type of content, what type of information is disseminated, that is scary to people. It should be scary to people. That's as close as you can get to state media. State media is generally what's used in communist countries like China and North Korea. State media, state propaganda media. You can't talk down about the state. And so that should be alarming most people, no matter what side of the political spectrum that you fall on. After the last two elections, someone like me, I'm like, neither side is really convincing me to, you know, draw a hard line in the sand and choose either or. I don't feel like they're working in the best interest of me 100% of the time. And that may never happen, but I do think that this tribalist approach that we have to politics results in a President Donald Trump and a President Biden, both of which many people feel are not qualified for the job and won't ever be qualified for the job. But yet, here they are. One was a president, one's currently president, and the other one is already gaining momentum for another run. And he could win again. You know what I mean? We'll see what 2024 holds. But these are the kind of discussions that need to be happening, because I'm telling you right now, if you put Sarah Huckabee Sanders on that podium with the White House emblem behind her, and she tells you guys that they're flagging posts and they're removing posts off of Facebook or Instagram or Twitter, and it's coming from a Donald Trump White House who made his entire campaign about fake news and that rhetoric, it would be chaos. It would be damn near anarchy. Because you would say to yourselves, holy crap, there is no reason that the federal government should be involved in what's going on social media. There are already First Amendment laws in place that if you are violating them, then yeah, you will be, you know, prosecuted or investigated, whatever the case may be. But to remove information, just to simply remove it, and because you can, and you have the power of the White House, that's a problem. And if it was coming from a Donald Trump administration, there would probably be people in the streets right now acting up. And it should be no different type of feeling, just because it's a Biden administration and Jen Psaki is the one telling you about it. It shouldn't be a difference. We have to draw hard lines for ourselves and try our best to protect our own freedoms, no matter who is in charge. You can't cheer censorship from one side and not think that it will not eventually double back and come to you and make you the target. For instance, I am a very big proponent of the Second Amendment. I think in almost all cases, there's no reason for the government to decide what type of guns you can have, how many you can have, and, you know, why you need them. I don't need to explain to you why I want the right to protect myself and my family to be upheld. It's right there in the Constitution. I'm not extremist with it. I do honestly believe that common sense type stuff, background checks, that's a pretty obvious one. I don't see a problem with that. Making sure that they don't end up in the hands of people who shouldn't have them, such as felons. Yeah, that makes sense. Beyond that, if I'm a law-abiding citizen, I should be able to go into anywhere that sells a gun, give you my ID, pay for my gun, run the background check, and move on. It shouldn't matter if I want to buy a rocket launcher. If I feel that's what I need to protect my family, then that's what I need to protect my family. Many people won't agree with that. That's your prerogative and that's your right. But it should also be my right to say that that's what I believe in and not have it be flagged for being problematic, because we don't know what that criteria is for being problematic. We don't know that. Like I said, the president went on national TV and said, if you get a vaccine, you won't get COVID, which is a complete lie. That's completely a lie. So if he had said that on social media, by the standards of his own White House, he should probably be banned from social media. And in the words of Jen Psaki, if you get banned from one platform, you should be banned from all the other ones. So if President Biden was to tweet out, go get the vaccine, you can't get COVID, you won't be hospitalized, and you won't die, it should be immediately removed, and he should probably be banned from social media by their own standards, and he should not be able to speak on social media ever again, which already presents the biggest issue of this of this problem. Who decides what's misinformation and what's disinformation, and how do you apply it? You can't apply it. If you can't apply it across the board, it shouldn't be applied. I highly doubt if President Biden was to tweet that, he would actually, his post would probably be removed, but you probably wouldn't get banned, along with all the other crazy stuff that he said. And this is me coming from you as your average American, just looking at what's going on and trying to figure out how I fit into all this. I'm not an elite. I'm not wealthy. I'm not in the 1%. I'm a regular American like almost anybody else. And I just want my rights to be protected and my freedoms upheld. You know what I mean? There are sometimes you got to speak up. And there's sometimes you got to take a stance that even if people don't like it, at least they know where you stand. I take a hard line against communism, and where I think something like this could put us on a trajectory to being communist. I mean, there's no reason a White House should be openly saying, yeah, we're monitoring people's posts on Facebook and we're getting them removed, and then we're actually messing with the algorithm and getting our own posts on there, our own posts boosted. The algorithm should be natural. If people are listening to you, it'll show. If people are watching you, it'll show. If they're not, you don't want to force that down their throat, especially if we don't know what you're saying is considered misinformation or disinformation. We don't know that. This is the information war that we're in right now. It is. It's the culture war and the information war. And the truth is really all that matters. And our freedoms and our rights being upheld is really all that matters. I chose to have this be the next topic I talked about because it's something I just couldn't shake. I just couldn't shake it. The story I got, I just kind of Googled it. It was the first thing that popped up, was the Washington Times. Just reading the article, it sounds like it might be a right-leaning publication. So obviously, it may be painted in a different light on a different publication. At some point, it's the duty of every American. If you hear something on the news, look at several different sources. You know what I mean? This is the first one I popped up just for this video, but you know, I watched Jen Psaki's press conference myself to hear her say this stuff. Like I said, I watched the Jimmy Dore show. I watched the Timcast IRL podcast. Googled to make sure that President Biden actually said what he said on the town hall. You know, so the transcripts are available. He didn't say that. But at the end of the day, it's up to you to verify and trust your own information and your own sources. And that's what it really comes down to. And as long as you can do that from an independent standpoint and not have it be something that's controlled or regulated by our federal government and the White House, then that is the best case scenario. At the end of the day, people can't tell you what to believe. The truth is not supposed to be subjective, but in the eyes of a lot of people, it is. It really is. People will believe what they want to believe. And there's not really a whole lot you can do about that except to just make sure no matter what, you put out the facts. Eventually, the facts always win and everything sorts itself out. So I do want to thank you guys for hanging out. I want to thank you guys for being patient. Like I said on the segment earlier, moving into the house and buying the house and everything was the top priority, but we're here now. This is a temporary workspace for me. As you can see probably behind me, you see the S in the picture. I'm recording from my daughter's room. So it's still the guerrilla style as you come to love and accept, you know, straight from my own house, my own place. Nobody's checking this. It's all me. I record it, I edit it, I post it. That's probably why it's so amateur now. But you know, one day we'll get it right. But again, thank you guys all for hanging out and rocking with me. The episode formats are changing. It's getting a little bit shorter for the episodes because, like I said, I'm not really worried about the censorship part. That happens. It happens. You know, I gotta find other ways to get my message or my thoughts out. But I have to be careful on what I say because of what I do professionally, and I don't want that to be something that can get me in trouble. So I pick and choose my topics now very carefully. And I pick and choose what I say very carefully because I don't want to be in that position. But this particular topic, I mean, everybody should have an opinion on this. Everybody should be informed on this. If you are not informed, if you don't feel like you know enough, get out there and search, man. Google, DuckDuckGo, Bing, whatever you got to do. Look up what's going on and see, you know, how things are changing. How do we stop it? I wish I had a solution for you. I don't know how we necessarily stop this. I just know that if more people are aware of it, then if I can't come up with a solution, someone smarter than me in a better position than me, maybe they can. But this has been Black and Blue, an Atypical Podcast, and I'll see you guys soon.